UK Wine Show, show number 31, The Wine Diet with Roger Corder. G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 31 for the 29th of December. I hope you had a good Christmas, and this week, in preparation for our New Year's resolutions, we're going to be talking to Roger Corder. He's produced a new book called The Wine Diet, and the book's all about how to get the most out of drinking wine and having a long and healthy lifestyle. In the interview, Roger gives us a rundown on how he found the relationship between drinking certain wines and how groups live longer. In Roger's research, he identified that wine and food is a beneficial combination. He also identified that wines rich in tannins also are quite rich in procyanidins, which impart a benefit from improved blood flow to people, reducing the risk of heart attacks and strokes. So it's quite an interesting interview and definitely something to get into. And don't forget that the UK Wine Show is sponsored by 3050, the wine tasting company. Wine tastings are a great way for friends and family to get together and share your enthusiasm for wine. Tastings can be tailored to your requirements in terms of entertainment and education, but most people come away with learning a bit and having a good time. But next up, we've got the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. Global warming could mean Britain has vineyards as far north as Scotland by the end of this century. Professor Richard Selly is a senior research fellow at the Department of Earth Sciences at Imperial College and author of The Winelands of Britain. He has studied our geology and viticulture through the ages and has found a correlation between the ebb and flow of vineyards across the British Isles and temperature change. With this information, he can take a step forward and predict where future vineyards will be as global warming continues. In simple terms, he says, our children will be drinking Sheffield Shiraz and Manchester Merlot, and our grandchildren will be drinking Glasgow Gewurz Traminer. Looked at step by step, he sees the vineyards creeping northwards via the Peak District and via the southern slopes of the Lake District. Here, the lake water would give advanced reflection onto the vines. And after that? Well, the northern shore of Loch Ness is his most favoured location for a vineyard by the end of the century. Meanwhile, Australia's continuing drought looks likely to reduce the 2007 grape harvest by around 20%, according to the Australian Wine and Brandy Corporation. The major drought impacts are in South Australia, Victoria and New South Wales, the states that account for the majority of wine grapes. Water allocations for irrigation to parched vineyards have already been lowered, and it's unlikely that even normal winter rains will allow a return to full allocations. 2006 hasn't been the best year for Australia's vineyards, with frost damage also being a major problem in cooler climate regions. However, the picture for Australian wine isn't all that bleak. The corporations say that current plantings have the capacity to meet projected wine demand over the next 5 years. And finally, in time for the new year and our new year resolutions, Sainsbury's has launched a new wine called Red Heart that claims to have 32% more antioxidants than the average red wine. Retailing at £4.99, it's a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon and Petit Verdot from Australia and has been introduced on the back of continuing claims that red wine is good for the heart. According to Sainsbury's, the antioxidant content of red wine is believed to play a role in the health benefits derived from drinking in moderation. However, wine writer Jamie Good was unimpressed to say the least, judging by his post on his wine blog at wineanorak.com. If red wine has health benefits, it is almost certainly not because of its antioxidant properties, he says. The latest evidence suggests that dietary antioxidants don't really work. And cardiovascular expert Professor Roger Corder agrees. In his book The Wine Diet, he says that in recent years, clinical trials of antioxidants in coronary heart disease have shown little benefit in terms of reducing the incidence of heart attack. Scientists have gone from thinking antioxidant properties were critical to wondering whether they have any relevance. That's all for the news this week. Back to you, Chris.
Thanks for that, Jane. It sounds as if Sainsbury's have sort of got the wrong end of the stick with their healthy heart wine, high in antioxidants. Jamie Good comments on antioxidants in his blog, and Roger Corder, a bit later on in the interview, will be saying things like, soft, easy drinking wines are probably low in procyanidins, which is exactly the way they describe their wine that's good for their heart in Sainsbury's literature. So, good try to Sainsbury's, but maybe not quite what we're looking for. Next up, let's have a listen to Roger and see what he has to say on wines.
Hi, I'm here with Roger Corder, the Professor of Experimental Therapeutics at the William Harvey Research Institute in London. How are you, Roger?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. You've just written a new book, The Wine Diet.
Yes, that's right.
How's it going?
Well, I think there's quite a lot of interest in the subject, and I hope that it'll be a bestseller.
Originally, it was due to be released, in sort of mid-January, wasn't it?
That's right, but the Telegraph did a serialisation that stimulated a lot of interest, and they decided to release it before Christmas.
It's about wine, and it's about food, and it's about staying healthy.
Absolutely. It's about combining moderate consumption of wine with good nutrition to live a longer, healthier life. I think a goal that we all aspire to, but sometimes we need some advice on how to achieve it.
What's the crux of the argument that you're saying?
Well, I think I need to take you back the journey I've taken. I started off as a wine drinker, and about 10 years ago thought, it's no good just drinking any old wine. I want to know whether one wine is the same as another wine in terms of its health benefit. And so I went down the road of purifying different polyphenols from wine to work out which ones had the most effect on blood vessel function.
Just before backup, polyphenols, do you want to just give us a quick overview of what a polyphenol is?
They're quite a diverse group of substances. Most of the wine polyphenols are flavonoids.
In a wine, what would be typically making up the flavonoid component?
Well, the main flavonoid component is anthocyanins and procyanidins.
Anthocyanins, they're the colouring, aren't they?
Anthocyanins come from the skin and they give the colour to the wine. Procyanidins come primarily from the seeds and they're extracted during the winemaking process. And they actually give the sort of tannin composition to wine. So a more tannic wine is a wine that's richer in procyanidins.
Tannins are them molecules that they have that bitterness in the mouth.
I wouldn't describe it as a bitterness. My feeling it's the astringency, so that you can have this mouth drying sensation. That's due to the tannin components. Although we don't yet understand fully how these molecules cause that astringency, because we can find things like traditional ciders, which are also quite rich in the same molecules, the procyanidins, but they don't necessarily come across as astringent drinks. So I think we need to understand a bit more about taste so that we can create wines that are both rich in procyanidins and at the same time popular drinks to consume.
The book you've got, The Wine Diet, it's really about balance and moderation, isn't it? You're quite an advocate of wine drinking, but not necessarily in vast quantities.
Absolutely. I think there's a few salient points here. One is that by searching the literature and studying what people benefited most from wine consumption, it was very clear that it was in a window of between 2 and 4 glasses a day. People who drank less than this were not appearing to get the same benefit as those who drank in this window, and those who exceeded this amount were actually more likely to suffer other illnesses and disease.
What are those benefits?
Well, the main benefit we've been interested in, and it's the one that can be characterised most readily when you're studying the effects of wine, is improvements in vascular function and a reduction in blood clotting risk, a thinning of the blood, if you like, so that you're less likely to have events such as a heart attack or a stroke. And most of the interest from a medical perspective, which is where I'm coming from, is to actually lower the risk of these disease occurrences, because really that's the most significant factor we can have in terms of improving people's well-being, is to actually give them recommendations for lifestyles that lowers the risk of heart disease. Because if you want to live a longer, healthier life, then the first thing you've got to try and do is cut down your risk of heart disease. I think the important thing about what I'm recommending in my book is not some abstemious lifestyle where you have no pleasure. It's about balancing pleasure with moderation in order to derive the best benefit from wine and some of the other things that I'm suggesting as alternatives to wine.
You mentioned heart disease, but there's other things going on there that you touch on in your book, such as diabetes, dementia.
Well, these, in some respects, these are connected. I mean, a typical healthy wine drinker is somebody who drinks in moderation and eats a good, healthy diet. If you don't have those habits, then your risk of having dementia is very much connected to your risk of heart disease. So a person who has risk factors for heart disease is also somebody who's more likely to get dementia if they grow older. And there's many other disease conditions that seem to relate to the same risk factors. For instance, blindness in old age, well, people would know it as age-related macular degeneration. That's the most common cause of blindness in old age. That also occurs more commonly in people which have risk factors for heart disease. In other words, overweight, lack of exercise, wrong sort of nutrition, aren't moderate wine drinkers. These seem to be all factors that if you drink moderately, if you exercise regularly, don't smoke and are not overweight, then you can reduce profoundly your likelihood of both heart disease and these other conditions compared to somebody of the same age who has all these not beneficial habits.
I like the way you describe it, not beneficial habits. We talked earlier about the different types of molecules in them, polyphenols and procyanidins.
Yes, I was going to talk about my route to discovery of the importance of procyanidins. Do you want me to...
Go for it.
I've been a red wine drinker for many years. And towards the end of the 90s, I began to start thinking, are all wines the same? Does just drinking red wine, is that enough? Or are there particular types of wine that are better than others? And so the route to discovering that was to do analyses in the lab to find out which wines were most beneficial in terms of reducing heart disease risk and improving blood vessel function. So we purified from wine the polyphenols that had the greatest biological activity, and we found that these were all short, small procyanidins. And then we thought...
When you're saying short, you mean they're not big, long chains?
They're not the sort of big, long chains which get longer as the wine ages and form condensed tannins and eventually precipitate in the bottom of the bottle as a sediment. We're talking about what you find in a young wine that are fairly small polymers of flavonoids. These are the biologically active species or component. And it's well described in my book if you need to know more about this.
Good plug.
But what we were focused on was finding out what was important and then seeing if certain wine types were richer in these. And it was a sort of interesting road to discovery where I was visiting places like Sardinia where there was more elderly people, or certainly more centenarians than anywhere else in Europe. And then I did an analysis of the French census data and realised that in the southwest France there was more people living over 75, or more men over the age of 75 in the department of Gers in southwest France, and there was double the number of 90-year-olds relative to the population. Having worked out where the greatest areas of longevity were, I analysed the wines and found that the most procyanidin-rich wines in France were corresponding to these areas of increased longevity, which has the inevitable conclusion that if you want to get the best benefit from consuming wine, it's better to consume a procyanidin-rich wine. Now, procyanidin-rich wines don't just come from the Nuro province of Sardinia and from southwest France. They come from everywhere in the world where people are using traditional winemaking methods that ensure full extraction of procyanidins from seeds during the winemaking process.
When you're talking about procyanidins, they're like the tannins, so you're looking at big, robust wines?
Exactly. We're talking the more tannic the style of wine, the better it's likely to be for you. And that means that the winemaker has to have a fermentation and maceration that includes a long contact time between the skins and seeds to get all these molecules extracted. And often that's the most important information you can learn about the wine in a bottle, because there's no quantity of polyphenols in the bottle, that there's very little other information. It might be an old vine wine is often better in that respect, because winemakers tend to make their best wines from old vines, and that may make a difference in the quality of the product that they're making. So you can find from most countries procyanidin-rich wines, tannic wines, that are very different from the light modern style of wine, which is fruity and soft, which is a popular supermarket wine, isn't necessarily one that's going to confer the same benefits as a wine from one of these more tannic origins.
So the type of wines you're talking about are things like those big, robust Cahors, maybe some Argentinian Malbec?
Absolutely. Although when it comes to grape varieties, often Cabernet Sauvignon worldwide, Nebbiolo grapes in Italy, these are grapes that give you much more tannic wines than the sort of Malbec you're finding in the Cahors and the Argentinian wines. Nonetheless, Cahors wines and Argentinian Malbecs are often good choices, but in on a comparative basis, Cabernet Sauvignons may do better. But really,
what's the best grape variety?
The most tannic grape variety is the Tannac grape variety. That's a fairly unique in France to the southwest area. In Cahors wines, you will find often a percentage of tannat is used. Uruguayan producers also use extensively tannat, and I understand it's grown in small pockets in other areas of South America. But it's not the most popular of grapes because it does make a very tannic wine, which requires a skilled winemaker to make a good wine. And it also, for most people's taste, it may need to be aged in a way that the wine softens before it's drinkable. But I've got such a, undiscriminating taste, I'm very happy to drink tannic wines with food at any time.
I think there's two ways people deal with tannic wines. One is to let the wine age, and as you said, normally the polyphenols or the tannins clump together and form the sediment, which obviously you lose what you're looking for in the wine.
Absolutely. You've got to balance your taste against the benefit you hope to achieve. Now, obviously, drinking wine for pleasure is often the main focus of consumers. So it's really about, I think, in finding cheap tannic wines to eat with your meals regularly and save the more expensive wines in your cellar or wherever until they've aged nicely and are pleasures. There is a stage when they're 2 to 3 to 5 years old where they're still quite rich in procyanidins often, and the tannins aren't so noticeable. So it's achieving the right balance, the interaction you want to have with your bottle.
Often a bit of fatty meat is quite nice with tannic wines.
Well, let's say
Or cheese?
Let's say rare meat rather than fatty meat.
Yeah, okay. I was just saying, if you're drinking the tannic wines to help yourself against the fatty foods, and then you're having to drink the...
I'm not advocating overconsumption of saturated fat, but I do accept that wine with meats is often a way of making the tannins more approachable.
In your book, you talked about cider being potentially quite good as well. Being a wine show, we're not going to dwell on it too long. But you did mention that the hazy, Somerset ciders, things like Scrumpy, are probably quite good in terms of procyanidins, but that the filtered ones aren't necessarily that good. Is that the same with wines? And what's going on there?
I think certainly when it comes to wine, if a wine is unfined and unfiltered, it's going to have a higher procyanidin level than ones that's been filtered to give it a long sort of shelf life and a crystal clear product. I think that we have to recognise that some of the old habits of winemaking, in terms of keeping the much in the way of tannins in the bottle, is probably something to consider. Although obviously, depending on where you were, you might have a refined approach to making wine, even traditionally using egg whites and the likes to fine wine.
What about other things to look for in a wine? Is things like climate or other things that you should look for a wine that might have lots of procyanidins in it?
I think one thing to look for is wines that say smooth or ripe or soft tannins. Those are the ones to avoid, because those are the ones that are often made with overripe grapes, which therefore have a lower procyanidin content.
So ripeness is a big factor.
That's right. So those are the ones to get away from. But look out for wines that are said to be fruity but have a long tannic finish, because that, or long finish, that often implies something with a bit more than a fruity, quaffable, light wine.
There's a quote that I've got to get in that I loved from your book. It was, wine is a food, a medicine, and a poison. It's just a matter of the dosage. What dosage do you recommend?
Most of the evidence from studies of wine drinkers suggests that it's quite close to what the government recommendations are. The difference seems to be that wine drinkers can drink slightly above that, provided that they consume their wine with food. However, for a man, that means drinking three small glasses or half a bottle of wine is still pretty much the upper limit of what you should be drinking per day to derive the most benefit. For a woman, it's one to two glasses of small glasses. It's 125 ml glasses. Those are the levels to be aiming at. But food consumption with wine is very important to actually be healthy and derive the best benefits from wine. As soon as you start drinking wine without food, you put yourself at risk of various cancers on a long-term basis, but also on a short-term basis, your blood pressure is more likely to be increased by drinking wine on always on an empty stomach.
Is that because the wine hits your bloodstream faster, or...?
As far as we can tell, that seems to be the main factor. Excessive consumption of all alcohol is associated with high blood pressure. And if you have high blood pressure, then the first thing you should be doing is cutting your alcohol consumption and also exercising more.
Thanks very much for that, Roger. Do you have a wine tip for us today?
Obviously, I'm a man of moderation, although haven't always been. Important thing to note is that if you want to have the benefits of drinking red and white, then I favour the fact that Vacuvin as a technology is a very effective way of keeping a good bottle of wine in the fridge, a white wine in the fridge, and having an occasional glass without feeling the need to drink the whole bottle.
Vacuvin, that's where you have a weak special cork and you suck the air out.
Exactly. You create a vacuum, cut down the oxidation, although I'm always concerned that if you apply too much vacuum, you extract some of the volatiles, and so you can damage the wine in other ways. But it generally, if you do it carefully, it's a way to preserve the shelf life of a decent wine so you can get more enjoyment out of it.
So you could drink a glass of white wine a night without too many problems.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you very much, Roger.
Okay, my pleasure.
Cheers. Excellent. I think it's excellent that we're just starting to get an idea on how wines can influence your health and what sort of quality and consumption you should be looking for. Just to summarize, according to Roger, wines that are rich in prosinins often are found all over the world, but they really seem to be designed for easy drinking, quaffing wines. Wines that are rich in prosinins often have high tannins, and you need food to tamper down some of those astringent drying effects of tannins, which works out really well because Roger believes that you should be drinking your red wine with food anyway, because that way you can get a reasonable amount of red wine in there to get the benefits of the red wine, but it slows down the alcohol uptake into the bloodstream, meaning you're not getting some of the liver problems that can develop if you drink too much wine. And I thought it was brilliant that he recommended between 2 and 4 125ml glasses of wine, which is between 250 and 500ml a day, which is a fair old slab of wine, which is quite nice. Next week, we're going to be sort of going along with this New Year's Eve resolution type stuff. We've got three interviews coming up over the next 3 weeks about wine education. We start off next week with Ian Harris, who's the CEO of Wine and Spirit Education Trust. The WSET train pretty much every professional in the wine trade, and they provide one of the most thorough courses around. The following week, we're going to be talking to Chris Foss from Plumpton College on how to become an English winemaker and the sort of courses they offer down at Plumpton about winemaking. And finally, we talk to Isabel Legeron, who is a wine educator, but she's also finishing her Masters of Wine this year. And we thought we'd have a chat to her about what it's like doing your Masters of Wine, with the Masters of Wine being one of the premium wine education courses around. So until next week with Ian Harris and WSET, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show was brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show was produced by Jane Scott and recorded and edited by Chris Scott. The news was read by Jane Scott and researched by Sandra Clement. The music for the UK Wine Show is Grifter Jingle 1 by Marcel de la Jatelle and Silence by Etoile Noire.